Good afternoon. It's Wednesday, the 1st of May 2019, just after 1 o'clock. Welcome to UK Column News. Your host today, Mike Robinson. Myself, Brian Gerrish.
Just 8 months to Christmas then.
May Day.
Yeah.
Yeah, brilliant. We should be celebrating Theresa May. Well, we will be shortly in the news.
Yes. Well, indeed. Now, just before we came on air, this appeared on the BBC website, so I thought we should include it. Julian Assange, WikiLeaks co-founder, jailed over bail breach. He's been given 50 weeks in prison for breaching his bail conditions, apparently. And of course, this is following his arrest a week or two ago from the Ecuadorian embassy in London. So the judge, what did he have to say? That he by hiding at the embassy, he said, you deliberately put yourself out of reach while remaining in the UK, she said, I should say. So really, that's what they've done. What's going to happen now? Well, apparently tomorrow there's going to be an extradition hearing to decide whether he's going to head over to the United States. Now, the BBC doesn't say that that'll happen tomorrow, but that's our understanding. Just as a reminder then, this evening, of course, Imperialism on Trial, taking place at Bloomsbury Baptist Church in London from 7 p.m. to 10 p.m. Doors open at 6:15. This is going to be hosted by George Galloway. It'll have Craig Murray, Annie Machen, Emmy Butlin and Alexander Mokouris speaking. So do get along to that if you possibly can. Actually, Julian Assange still needs people's support. I understand there is going to be some presence outside the courts tomorrow whenever this extradition hearing takes place. No doubt details of that will become available in due course.
It's incredible, isn't it? You speak out about the crimes of the states or states or and the law is against you in no time at all.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Well, let's move on to Jeremy Corbyn then, because, of course, Extinction Rebellion has been the big issue of the last couple of weeks. And what did he have to say this morning on Twitter? Today, the UK Parliament must declare an environment and climate emergency. MPs must recognise that voting for Labour's motion is their historic duty. So the Labour Party has put a motion into the House of Commons. And he's going to say, apparently, that Parliament rarely leads change, but usually drags its feet. Think about the huge transformations to society, workers' rights, women's rights, gay rights. The impetus has always come from outside, from social movements and communities. While Westminster is often the last place to understand it, let's not repeat that pattern. Let's respond to the younger generation who are raising the alarm. By declaring a climate emergency, we could set off a wave of action from parliaments and governments around the world. It's a chance that won't be available to succeeding generations. It's our historic duty to take it. And he's going to go on to talk about the need for green infrastructure and so on. So this is quite an amazing position for Jeremy Corbyn to take, because it's my understanding that this has not been his position in the past.
But it's not an emergency over Brexit, Mike, is it?
No.
You know, we've got constitutional issues. We've got the country being taken apart, but we don't call an emergency debate over that.
No, because that's all right. On hand. We don't need to worry about that at the
okay,
moment.
That's
so
good.
Climate is the thing. Piers Corbyn, Jeremy's brother, had this to say. The fourth industrial revolution, hashtag fake news, hashtag fake investment bubble is here. It's not to hashtag save the planet, but to hashtag save the banks. There's no hashtag climate emergency, only UN, EU, Soros, super rich IMF banks emergency. Extinction Rebellion is orchestrated hysteria backed by Soros to fool you. Now, there's not too much I could disagree with in that tweet. You could argue that brothers disagree. But as I say, I'm not aware that they have disagreed on this issue in the past. So it's perhaps... Is it surprising or is it not surprising that Jeremy Corbyn is pushing this at the moment? Maybe this is where he thinks the momentum is at the moment.
Well, yeah, I certainly think there's an effort to push things to the green agenda to get the heat off a lot of other stuff. So
absolutely. Well, let's just briefly come on to Brexit. And here is Best for Britain, who, of course, are a Remain campaign group. Website has this as the main headline. Most constituencies would now back Remain. So that's fantastic news. The question then is, Why are they so worried about this? Because they released this press release this morning. Research shows 7.9 million eligible voters won't have their voice heard in EU elections. So Best for Britain has launched a national campaign to encourage 7.9 million people who are eligible to vote in the upcoming EU elections but are not currently on the electoral roll to register before the deadline of midnight on Tuesday the 7th of May. Make sure you've signed up to vote now and so on. So the question is, Brian, are they perhaps a little bit concerned about their previous headline that most constituencies would vote Remain now? Are they maybe not quite sure of that, that they feel that they need to run a national campaign to make sure that they get every single voter they can possibly get registered? Well, let's just put their statistics on screen there. So if we take the southwest of England as an example, they're saying that there are 4.4 million eligible people in the voting population, that 85% of them are currently registered to vote. So I would have thought that was a reasonably high proportion of people already registered to vote, but they want to get the last 15%.
Because essentially what they're saying is not true. This is the propaganda that there is now a swing to Remain when there absolutely isn't. If there was this massive swing to Remain, as you say, why would they have a problem?
Right. So, yeah, register to vote.
Propaganda.
Yeah.
Well, let's bring in Theresa May for May Day. And I have to say that we are reading some very interesting and extraordinary material. And thank you very much to the viewer who pointed out this article from the New Statesman. Much like the victim of a cult, Theresa May has been brainwashed into a state of monomania. The Prime Minister has trapped herself in a mental state from which she cannot escape. So this is pretty heavy stuff. And a picture of Theresa May, if you actually look at that image, it's almost as though she's about to cry. I don't know whether she was thinking she was going to have a meeting with Corbyn or something of that nature. But who wrote the article? Well, it was a professor of developmental neuropsychology from the University of Oxford. So somebody that we should perhaps pay attention to. And this is what she had to say. I'm not somebody who thinks all politicians are corrupt and evil. Undoubtedly, such cases exist, and psychopaths often thrive in the kind of highly competitive context of politics in which you need a thick skin and a determination to succeed. But many people go into politics with the aim of making a positive difference. And I'm open-minded enough to recognise that many of them are well-intentioned, even if I disagree with their political strategies and prejudices. I'm going to say at this stage, I've taken quite a few quotes because how this lady puts her information across is very interesting because it weaves a thread. But we're just, in the first instance, going to have a look at her assessment of the mental state of Theresa May. So that's how she opened. How does it go on? Many have argued that she's driven by a lust for power. I have a different take on it. To me, she looks like a victim of mind control. So we've got a senior neuropsychologist from the University of Oxford freely admitting that mind control is real and we've got victims of it. That's the first thing I draw. I became fascinated with this topic when writing a novel in which some characters are recruited into a cult. Amongst my background reading was Stephen Hassan's Combating Cult Mind Control. He used his experience of being recruited as a student into the controversial Unification Church known as the Moonies to cast light on the mental state that adherents find themselves in. So it's not exactly deep research that she's using in passing this comment, but nevertheless, it's interesting. She goes on. Although I've been tempted at times to think Theresa May has been abducted and had a chip put in her brain by a malign foreign power, I doubt that anyone is acting as her controller. But I do think she has boxed herself into a mental state from which she cannot escape. Over the months following Brexit, she became increasingly wooden, rapidly earning the nickname Maybot for her failure to engage with questions, instead simply regurgitating the same old hackneyed cliches. Mm. Now, we've witnessed that, Mike, and indeed we've commented on that on the news, that when Theresa May is asked a simple question, she regurgitates a set answer, even if the question is repeated. Mm. So clearly, Theresa May is being influenced by something. But this psychologist suggests one minute that she's under mind control and the next minute that Theresa May has boxed herself in to something. So let's go to this. It's worth bearing in mind that, as Hassan noted, the Moonies kept their converts awake with activities, surrounded them with fellow believers. It's difficult to think rationally when both sleep deprived and when there's never any escape from the situation or downtime in which you can talk things through with people who take a different view. May's schedule has been unremitting with trips all over the world and relentless political pressure. It must have been utterly exhausting. So the way it looks to me is that she has brainwashed herself into a state of monomania as a way of coping with the situation. And by that, she means focusing on one issue. So is it accidental that Theresa May has this huge team around her, pressurising her every moment of the day, Mike? Is that an accident, or is that part of the very makeup of the Conservative Party and how that party controls a prime minister? Well, I don't know, but we could have some thoughts about it. Let's just continue. I'm on record of being opposed to another referendum because I think a referendum is a terrible way of making political decisions on complex matters. But now it does seem that the only option that might have some prospect of saving us from May's destructive course, her mantra that we must obey the will of the people, could only be countered by a demonstration that the will of the people has indeed changed. Hundreds of thousands marching through London hasn't done it. They are just dismissed as the metropolitan elite. 6 million signing a petition to revoke Article 50 hasn't done it because it falls short of 17.4 million who voted for Brexit, even though the parallel situation to leave without a deal has only 1/10 of the support. Polls are deemed inconclusive. So it seems the only way to demonstrate that the majority no longer wants the Brexit that is on offer would be another vote. So fascinating dialogue by this lady, because she's commenting apparently on the mental health of Theresa May, but at the same time she weaves a beautiful dialogue as to why really there should be another vote.
Yes, the only thing I would say there in your comments is you asked whether it's the Conservative Party control of Theresa May. I would just throw into the mix the Cabinet Office, which of course is civil service, and particularly Mark Sedwell and the infrastructure around him and Ollie Robbins.
Right.
So I think that's the main controlling group. So is she right that Theresa May has boxed herself into this, or in fact is it that group which is
boxed Theresa May in?
Yeah. Absolutely.
Well, I thought we'd just summarise that because it was quite a few comments. So let's come back and see what the key points were. She says that Theresa May looks like the victim of mind control. And we're saying she acts like it as well because she can't answer a simple question. She can only repeat parrot fashion a response. She's been called a May bot, a robot, for her failure to engage with questions. She has boxed herself into a mental state from which she cannot escape. This is getting on to your point, Mike. Moonies kept their converts awake with activities and prevented them from reacting and expressing themselves rationally. But she has brainwashed herself into a state of monomania as a way of coping with the situation. Well, exactly who is in control of Theresa May? Of course, the Cabinet Office has the power. That is the government of occupation. And who is controlling the Cabinet Office? Well, ultimately, the people controlling the purse strings. Mm. So we're talking about the funders of the Conservative Party and, of course, the big banking cartels. This was the description of her diagnosis of monomania. So you're focused on one issue. But I'd encourage people both to read the article and to have a look at what other psychiatrists and psychologists say about monomania, because, of course, this indeed is a created term out of the psychology, psychiatric industry itself. Well, should we add a bit to this? I think we should. Because, of course, one of the things going on in Parliament at the moment is we now have MPs taking mindfulness courses. So we go back to a few months when the Express had this article, MPs take mindfulness course to tackle depression in Parliament. I had to do something. That is a quote from one of the MPs. The article doesn't actually name Theresa, although an image is provided with this particular article of Theresa May. But aside from the MPs receiving mindfulness, it also said that 250 parliamentary staff have also attended mindfulness courses. Now, who is driving the mindfulness in Westminster? Well, it's an all-parliamentary group. The co-chairs here are Tim Lawton and Chris Wren, MP. And what is mindfulness? Well, we will say that mindfulness is applied psychology with a hint of neuro-linguistics. But if you're interested about any risks, then one of the places you could go is about mindfulness. Is it for everyone? Down at the bottom here. And what does it say? Well, it starts off by saying mindfulness is best considered as an inherent human capacity akin to language acquisition, a capacity that enables people to focus on what they experience in the moment, inside themselves, as well as in their environment. It goes on with an attitude of openness, curiosity and care. This is a wonderful thing, Mike, until you actually read down a little bit more when you come to this paragraph. Let's have a look at that. This is what it says. On occasion, participants in meditation groups or retreats report unusual, unexpected experiences. This can prompt a variety of reactions from curiosity at one end of the scale to concern or distress at the other. Further research is needed to better understand the origin and frequency of such experiences and how best to respond to them. E.g., under what circumstances is it appropriate to continue with mindfulness meditation, to change the type of the practice, or to pause or to stop altogether? Teachers should be trained to be alert to these experiences, and teacher training organisations should establish protocols as to how best to manage them. Now, this is outrageous, because what they're actually talking about is the ability to damage people's minds and mental health by the application of mindfulness. That is a risk, and they simply suggest that people should be trained. But in our questioning of this all-parliamentary organisation, and indeed Oxford University, from whence it comes, as to what the risks are, they simply refuse to acknowledge that there are any risks to the training. So do you think maybe that Theresa May has had a little bit of mindfulness and it hasn't reacted very well with her overstressed mind? Well, what have other MPs got to say? These are some of the quotes in that article. I knew I had to do something about stress and work-life balance. Mindfulness never crossed my mind till I discovered the course, and it's working for me. I even managed to sleep well that night. Well, if you've got MPs who just don't sleep, Mike, they're not capable of doing their job.
It's terrible.
And the course empowered me to reframe my life from insurmountable pressures and problems to tackling issues in proportion and finding an inner calm, restoring quality to every day. Now, my question on this is that as we watch the country descend into crisis and chaos, have we now got MPs who've been retrained to think that's fine, be calm, sleep well at night, and it's not really your problem? Mm. I think that's possibly true. We just remind viewers that UK Column has written quite a lot on the risks of behavioural change. This is one article, Behavioural Change in Common Purpose. Encourage people to have a look at that. We've also got British Cabinet Office collaborates with French brainwashing guru to change the way we think. We've got Magic to Madness, the government's NLP assault on our minds. And of course, we've also warned that these same tactics are being used in the NHS. So here we've got towards a million change agents. And that is an expression not from the UK Column, but from a common purpose trained NHS change agent themselves. What else can we tell you? Well, we can tell you that within Parliament, other coaches are working on MPs. This is Peter Botting. You can visit his website. He says that that he's a strategy storytelling and speaker coach, storytelling narratives and coaching. And he's got a whole section where he starts to talk about his good works in Parliament, advancing your political career. In this second section, over a third of current Conservative MPs have been through my training. 20 MPs in 2015 and on he goes. I think it's about 80 of them all told. And then he's got advice on how he can help you get elected. And down at the bottom, getting what you want with words. Mm. This is, it's all a bit cultish. I'm sure this man's doing a very good job, but I think the public could ask, what is he actually doing? And I did like this quote. I have helped politicians win elections with swings that shame the national average in the UK. He's got Labour politicians to work with Conservatives in the national UK No to AV referendum, and helped a Prime Minister tell his story and sell his vision for his country at the United Nations General Assembly in New York. So when we hear a politician speak, are we hearing what's coming out of the politician's own mind, or are we actually now hearing reframed politicians with the words of or the views of Mr. Botting?
Or someone else.
Or someone else, we don't know. If you are not aware of this document, it's easily found on the internet with a simple search, Mindspace. And we've warned time and time again that the Conservative government brought this in. And the Mindspace document is talking about influencing behaviour through public policy. And the quote here is, this means that citizens may not fully realise that their behaviour is being changed, or at least how it's being changed. Mindspace also says that politicians ought to behave properly because otherwise they won't be giving a good role model to the general public. Fine. And we just want to remind people that this psychology, which can have very dangerous effects, was first trialled on staff in DEFRA in a multi-million pound experiment. I think it was £34 million. We don't even know whether the government staff knew they were guinea pigs. So is Theresa May mentally ill? We're not qualified to say. Does it appear that she's undergone some form of mind control? I think we would agree with the Oxford professor. But as you say, Mike, who's driving it? The Cabinet Office?
Mm. My opinion.
In your opinion. Mm. Okay. Well, we'll just break subject and say thank you very much to all of you who attended Robert Green's funeral on Monday. It was a lovely sunny day, beautiful church. The church service was really lovely and included some of Robert's favourite guitars, blues music. So that was wonderful. And of course, the Ring of Bells pub afterwards, supporters gave some short addresses talking about Robert's work as an activist. And we were also entertained with some very nice harp music. So from Robert's family, a very big thank you to all the Robert Green supporters that turned up for the funeral. A sad day, but I have to say a wonderful atmosphere. Yeah. And before I pass over to Mike, I'll just say interesting to see that the BBC is crowing that children's services are at breaking point, and huge amounts of money are to be pumped into children's services, millions and millions of pounds, in order to try and take the pressure. I think Robert Green would be saying more money for the stealing and abuse of children. But we'll do some more research into where the nearly £500 million of money is going to be spent.
Mm. Okay, G is for Google, apparently. Yesterday this happened. Google's stock price fell significantly. Why did that happen? Well, apparently they are suffering badly from loss of revenue as a result of, well, of what? Well, the timing, of course, this is the last financial year. The timing is a bit coincident with this, which came out on Google's official blog, expanding our work against abuse of our platform. And of course, They began making changes to YouTube's algorithms in particular to make sure, as it says in this blog post, that those that are pushing what they describe as fake news or conspiracy theories are separated from monetization schemes. Well, unfortunately, this seems to have resulted in falling revenues for falling ad revenues for YouTube in particular. So Google announced the results yesterday in a conference call, and this has had the effect of wiping £70 billion off their market capitalization. So that's a crying shame, isn't it, Brian?
It is a bit of a shame. It is a shame. Just in case you thought we'd finished with Theresa May, I'm afraid we haven't, because thank you very much to the person who alerted us to this article. Now, we don't know quite what this article is. It could be completely fake news, but it has been published. It's out there. So at the moment, we're going to take it at face value. And what is the headline? Uri Geller is using telepathic mind control on Theresa May to try and stop Brexit. So Theresa May is under some pressure. She's got a cult being run by her own party. She's a May bot, and Uri Geller is in the back using a little bit of telepathic mind control. But there seemed to be a little bit of depth to this story, because it talks about a letter which Uri Geller has written to Theresa May. And these are some excerpts. "My dear Theresa, we've known each other for over 21 years since you became our MP. You visited my home in Sunning, where you also live, 3 years before you became Prime Minister. I predicted your victory when I showed you Winston Churchill's spoon, that should be in my Cadillac, or on my Cadillac possibly, which I asked you to touch." Now, the article does say he is talking about his spoon. "As you might have read, I'm ensuring that Jeremy Corbyn never gets the keys to number 10 Downing Street with the power of my mind, which I've proved over and over again. I will ensure that they bend out of all of proportion to ensure he never takes up residence there. My power has been validated by the CIA, MI5 and Mossad." Are you still with it?
Absolutely.
Good. "And now to the point of my open letter to you. I feel psychically and very strongly that most British people do not want Brexit." It seems to be a bit out of touch here.
Yeah.
"I love you very much, and I will not allow you to lead Britain into Brexit. As much as I admire you, I will stop you telepathically from doing this. And believe me, I'm capable of executing it. Before I take this drastic course of action," excuse me, "I appeal to you to stop the process immediately while you still have a chance." Now, is this man threatening the Prime Minister? If this letter is true, could it be perceived as a threat, possibly?
Well,
I don't know. "Although I currently live in Israel, I'm still a British citizen and feel very passionately about the country and the people I came to love." So, not sure what to make of this. I've called it an alleged letter because I can't see any factual evidence. But she's in a bit of a pickle, I think, at the moment, Mike. Boxed in and being telepathically assaulted by Uri Geller.
Well, there you go. It's not the Cabinet Office after all, then.
No, we'll see whether some of the fake news censorship picks up that particular report.
Absolutely. Right, let's get onto this then. This is more from Oxford, actually. This is the Oxford Research Group. "Improving the UK offer in Africa, lessons from military partnerships on the continent." So they say the uplift in the UK military strategy, its attention to activities in Africa, is welcome, particularly as it forms part of broader efforts to develop a more strategic approach to the UK's work in conflict-affected states. And they talk about Nigerian troops on the front line against Boko Haram having received specialist training from Britain, that counter-terror operations in Mali are being supported by British Chinook helicopters, that British troops in Kenya have trained African Union peacekeepers heading for Somalia, while also working with international partners to reform the Somalian security forces in the long term. And they say that as the UK military continues to look at ways to improve its own contribution to British efforts with partners in the African continent, it is problematic that so many soldiers appear to agree that the course that they are offering partners does little to deal with the real problems affecting stability in the countries in which they're deployed. So this report seems to be saying that Britain is improving the offer to the UK offer to Africa, but it's not really having much effect. So they say so far, despite the support of the UK and its allies to Kenya, Nigeria and Mali, as well as other troop contributing countries in the region, none seem much closer to developing able, accountable and legitimate security forces. So we're putting all this money in, all this foreign aid money in, and this direct support by the military, and yet we don't seem to be having much positive effect. So my question is, what is this all about? So I'm just going to remind people about the... Well, just have a look at this.
First of all, our collective defence, we are ironclad committed to NATO. NATO of 29, that is collective defence Article 5. But there are problems and issues where I do not see NATO, but Europe has to be able to act.
Though this transatlantic alliance with America is extremely important and we need to maintain it, the best partnership is a partnership where we have our own capabilities that are also strong.
I was talking about Africa. This is not a typical place for NATO. We are very committed to NATO and other places, but Africa is a place where we need to be able to act as Europeans.
For example, one of the things that my institute does is work in Africa, and at the moment we're particularly focused on the Sahel group of countries. That's that band of countries across the north part of sub-Saharan Africa, where you've got exploding populations, dire poverty, radicalization and extremism. We may well face the next wave of migration and extremism from those countries. It makes perfect sense for Europe to have the military capability to help those countries with their security.
And for that, we created the European Defence Union,
right,
to have a comprehensive approach with diplomacy, economic development, well, and the military means.
So is it a coincidence that Britain is in there sort of softening up the region with their training, which doesn't seem to be achieving anything, while both a former British Prime Minister and a serving German defence minister are talking the same things about Africa being the main area of interest for the new European Union Defence Union. It seems a bit of a coincidence that we're Britain's piling all this money in and not really having much effect. There would be a political case to make at that point that if Britain can't do it alone, that they need the support of something of the scale of the European Union in order to pull this off. This report from the Oxford doesn't seem seems to fit that that scenario pretty well.
Well, everything's carrying on business as usual, isn't it? There is no Brexit, so what's carrying on is UK fully supporting and cooperating with EU foreign policy, because of course defence and security for the EU is totally under the control of the Foreign Office and the equivalent in the EU, and they've declared they're going to use their power effectively to take control of North Africa. So it's business as usual. Brexit is into the long grass. They're just carrying on, Mike.
Absolutely. Now, this morning, the government announced with a nice little graphic, a nice little animation, that where they're going to do all kinds of useful stuff to secure Internet of Things appliances. So all kinds of Internet of Things appliances, basic cybersecurity features are going to be built into these products, possibly by law. They've started a consultation on this now. Consumers will get better information on how to secure their devices. And this consultation has been launched ahead of potential legislation, as I say. So here's Margot James, the digital minister, the current digital minister, saying many consumer products that are connected to the internet are often found to be insecure, putting consumers' privacy and security at risk. So they say that the options that the government will be consulting on include a mandatory new labelling scheme. The label would tell consumers how secure their products are. This is with respect to, for example, smart TVs, toys and appliances. This would mean that retailers would only be able to sell products with an Internet of Things security label attached. The government will be consulting on options including a a mandatory new labelling scheme, as I say, and it focuses on mandating the top three security requirements that are set out in the current Secure by Design Code of Practice. That includes that device passwords must be unique and not resettable to a universal factory setting. The manufacturers of Internet of Things products provide a public point of contact as part of vulnerability disclosure policy, and that they state the minimum length of time for which the device will receive security updates, and that they have an end of life policy. So I was wondering, well, why? Why are they doing this, and why are they doing this now? Well, then we have this being published on the War on the Rocks website. Five Eyes must lead on 5G. And this is from Representative Mike Gallagher, who is a Marine Corps veteran and Republican congressman from Wisconsin 8th District, and also from Tom Tugendhat, who's a former British Army officer and the Conservative MP for Tunbridge and Malling, and he chairs the House of Commons Foreign Affairs Committee. So they've jointly written an article on this issue. And so let's have a look at some of the things that they say. The bandwidth and speed of 5G systems far exceed that of 4G, allowing countries to push near persistent data over telecommunications networks, transform their economies, and enable emerging sectors like the Internet of Things. This level of connection will change what it means to be critical natural and national infrastructure, from power to services. The integration will be greater than anything we've seen to date. They go on to say that will include national security. In the United States, for example, the Department of Defense is already experimenting with how 5G can improve intelligence sharing and military operations. Utilizing commercial 5G networks for military purposes makes it essential that such networks remain secure. So they say this is a key moment for the Transatlantic Alliance. The security of our communications from the intimate to the highly classified is at stake over the coming months. And they go on to talk about Huawei and the risks of Huawei and China getting involved in 5G infrastructure. Now, their main concern is that China's national intelligence law and national cyber law both legally require, they say, that Chinese entities cooperate with the party state. And so they go on to say here, this is not a far-fetched dystopian future. This is the reality that the Chinese Communist Party is building on a daily basis. There is still time for the free world to act, but it must do so with a sense of urgency. Once again, Five Eyes must lead the way. So they are absolutely pushing the idea that Huawei getting involved in Britain's 5G network, as Theresa May seems to have, and they do mention Theresa May seeming to have agreed to this at this point, is a major security risk. But I would say that if Huawei and the Chinese government are a major security risk for the intelligence services using the commercial 5G network as effectively a military network, then that is also a security. Then the fact that the security services are using the 5G network in this way is a security risk for those of us that are using it on a day-to-day basis. So if they're concerned about the relationship with foreign powers, we should perhaps be concerned about the relationship of our intelligence services and our government and what they are collecting via the 5G network on us, Brian, or am I being...
No, I'd certainly agree with that, Mike. There's a bit of business. The one minute the Chinese are apparently our arch enemy, we've got to send aircraft carriers to the South China Sea because China is so dangerous. And then the next minute, Theresa May and the Conservative Party are bringing them in to help build nuclear infrastructure inside the United Kingdom. And now we're offering them contracts with 5G. And we've got the security services now starting to say we're very worried. There actually isn't any cohesive, coherent government anymore on how we actually secure the country. I think this is the theatre that we're seeing around this, I think, is deliberate to confuse society as something is built, despite any possible views or opposition from the general public.
If Tugendhat thinks that China being involved in the installation and the build-out of the 5G networks is a security risk, as an ex-former military man yourself, what are your thoughts on the use of a commercial telecommunications network by military and intelligence services. Surely that in itself, aside from the, any Chinese involvement, is a massive security risk?
It's got to be now. I'm going to say if we go back years ago, the military, certainly intelligence services, are going to try and use any means of communication they've got access to. If you wanted to communicate and you could do it on a civilian satellite channel, you would use that if it was the only one available.
Right.
The difference is now with the danger of hacking and well, it's mainly hacking and cyber attacks, is the more you use these systems, presumably the more vulnerable you're going to get. Mm. So I think it makes less sense. It was happening, but now to me, it's becoming more dangerous.
Mm. Okay, well, let's end with this one. John Bolton on the warpath, apparently. This is the New Yorker. A very interesting article. This is John Bolton, who, of course, is Trump's national security advisor. Well, what does he have to say? He says, this article is quoting a guy called Mark Groombridge, who is a former aide to John Bolton, an aide for 15 years. And he says, John is thinking, to the extent I can modify or mollify the president's actions, I will. So the allegation here is that John Bolton is there to manipulate Donald Trump. The article goes on to say that the conflict between Trump and Bolton is summed up by the statement from an unnamed Western diplomat. The trouble for Bolton is Trump does not want war. He does not want to launch military operations. They say that Bolton has a Hobbesian view of the world, a view of the universe, rather. Life is nasty, brutish and short. They quote Bolton as saying that Homo sapiens are hardwired for violent conflict, and we're not going to eliminate violent conflict until Homo sapiens ceases to exist as a separate species. I think that's a very interesting statement.
Wow.
And the whole notion, you could even think about eliminating it, not just, that's war that is, not just in our lifetime, but soon thereafter, I think reveals a fundamental misunderstanding of human nature. So this is a quote from a 2009 interview that Bolton gave to Fox News, which this article has published. Now, Bolton has responded on Twitter to this. He has said, a recent article quoted an embittered former employee who I haven't seen or spoken to in several years. He has no knowledge of my thinking. His remarks are contrary to my views and completely off the mark. The reporter never asked for comment. So that's Bolton's position. But I have to say that anybody that that I've seen commenting on John Bolton over the years has pretty much expressed similar views to those expressed in the article. And I think that the quote from December 2009 interview with Fox News really says everything we need to know about this man. And the question is, can Donald Trump actually keep him on track?
Yeah.
You know.
Remarkable analysis that Homo sapiens are causing all the trouble. When I look out the window, I see that the people who are pushing hard for all the war and violence are the political elite of whatever origin they are. Now, some of them may have mental issues. That's possibly true. But psychopaths, possibly sociopaths. But I think we should start looking at our own politicians if you want to stop the wars.
Absolutely.
And I never thought I would be saying such a thing after my particular background all those years ago, but things become clear. We'll end by saying thank you very much to all the support that came through for Robert Greene. It was wonderful to see. And also say thank you to all of you overseas who are supporting the column. We've had a little flurry of extra contacts from South Africa, and also Australia again, and Canada. So thank you very much to those people. And we'll say, if you're not a subscriber of UK Column, please consider taking out a subscription, because we can only do what we do with your financial support. Thanks for joining us. We will be back at the same time on Friday.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.